Mr. Carter, Reel 17. Lieutenant Kirkpatrick was killed. Was he a young man?
Yes, he was a young man, and he'd just been married on his last day while he was down.
What feelings do you have when you see men who you've been with for some time and you've respected, even, you know, like them as friends, when this happens to them?
Oh, it was very sad, very sickening to know that you lost all their men on that day. Absolutely, I had 7 men left.
And these were men that you'd been very close to?
Yes, we'd been a good team together.
Do you become angry towards the enemy?
Yeah.
Do you become angry towards the enemy?
No, just sad. Yeah. I'm always broke. Breaks you up, you know, thinking about it all the time.
Is there not also a feeling of relief, thinking, well, I'm okay, I'm still okay. They've gone, but I'm here. They've missed me.
Well, it was when I landed. It was, thank God, I've gotten onto land. And we've done our job. Now it's up to the 49th to land and go through us and take over, which didn't happen because they couldn't land for 3 days on account the weather changed. So we were stuck there just in defensive position, you see. Had they been able to land and go through us, we'd have more or less been well ahead then, you know, but you couldn't afford to go with a. We wanted another division to back us up, a fresh one, and they would have most likely pushed on and straight into Bayeux and that, which was taken the next day.
What was the terrain like that you were moving over and fighting over?
It was mostly agricultural then, or a bit open. The worst fighting to it was to come later in the wood page.
But you hadn't met that yet?
Not met that.
And this would be the end of the first day, presumably.
Yes.
Were the enemy now more aware? Were they retaliating and fighting more heavily than when you first landed?
No, not on our front. Not where we were. They were on the beach and towards Cannes. They were fighting.
Was tank support coming through with you?
No, we saw these armoured cars that came through cruelly.
But you hadn't got tanks up with you at this point?
No, we hadn't got tanks up then. Not on our side, anyway.
What happened to you then at the end of that night, after this particular incident? What happened to you?
Well, going back a bit, the Americans were supposed to join up with us on D-Day, you know. And Kirkpatrick told us, he said, the Americans were having a bit of trouble. And of course we were a bit, you know, not too pleased about it. And he said, oh, he says, they've run into trouble, they've run into the SS division, he said, and they can't join up with us. And on the night, I say, we went through cruelly. There was no sign of life. But the French, I understand, were all down in the cellars in the houses. And I went through cruelly. These two wounded men, the bloke who was carrying the paint gun, he jumped the gun. He got on one of these armoured cars to take these two wounded back. He couldn't get them back. And of course he left his paint gun. So I had that to carry, with Miss Ten as well. I got through cruelly, and I looked round, and I thought to myself, well, what the hell am I carrying this gun for? We have no ammunition for it. So I propped it up against a tree. Next day, Hollis came, he handed it back. He said, you'll need this. We went a bit further, and it may have been the next day.
Had you dug in for the night? Did you dig in where you were for the night?
I dug in.
What kind of a night was it, that first night in France?
Well, except for down the beach, you could hear the steel firing
But on the front where you were, it was a quiet night.
Yes, yes.
You wouldn't get much sleep though for all that, would you?
No, I wouldn't get a lot of sleep because it was morning light, but soon light, you know. I know there was one a bit further on, we were sick of digging in, telling him that. And we came to where that the Germans had been planting these along telegraph poles to stop aircraft. They must have been they were recently done. So rather, it was hard digging, so it was easy to pull one of them out and enlarge all and make a slip trench for yourself and lay the post in front of you. Which I got commended for that, and he shot it off it, another officer and took over. And I think we would be static for about 4 or 5 days. And then,
had you met the Canadians by then? Had they come up with you? They were on your left,
no,
left
no,
side, left flank. You didn't see anymore.
No, anymore.
But you obviously reached your objectives, and you just stuck and wait, and you were there for, as you say, through a number of days.
Had to take up defensive positions, wait for reinforcements, and ammunition, and all the rest. You weren't far off there, you know.
But was food getting through to you for okay?
No, we carried our own rations.
What were you carrying?
Tinned stuff, biscuits and tinned stuff, and you had tea, and you had one of them you could light with a match. I don't know, you know what it is, like a cylinder thing, but you light it and you can eat your rice pudding or whatever you had in your.
Yeah, that's self-heating tins or something
like that. Like a white stuff it was, camphor or something. I can't remember what it was, somebody I don't know what it was. It was issued to every man. I don't think we saw white bread for at least a week or so, till the bakeries got to establish it, so it was all biscuits.
So you carried a number of day supplies on your own person?
Yeah.
Were there many French civilians around? I know you've mentioned the two that you first met, but were there many as you got further inland?
No,
didn't see.
No, it was more or less
there. The second day, you dug in for the night, and then you moved on for the second day.
Yeah.
Where did that take you?
Well, I think it was 4 or 5 days before we moved, and then when we did move, we were lucky again, because we were in this open space and we were a company, all this was with us, and evidently we'd crossed the bombing line, and our airplanes were active above us, and one came down and it opened up on us. And we were lucky again. He only got a truck, set it afire. I don't know whether he wounded the driver. But all this had to work quick then, because he carried the identification tape, which is a yellow strip. And he got that out of his pack and rolled it out. And then he had a yellow flare, which he lit. Of course, then the plane flew away then. But it was suddenly went too far over the bombing line. But to miss all them men that were in that group, like, he's very lucky.
Your company commander, did you see much of him during this time?
No, I didn't see him for a long time. No. Hastings didn't see him for a long time.
No, that was the battalion commander, Hastings. The company commander.
Company commander.
Lofthouse, was it they called him? Lofthouse, I think you said before, yeah.
No, I didn't see him for a long time. But,
how did the communications work between platoons and company and battalion?
Had wireless.
Were they good? Were they efficient?
They must have been. They kept in touch with each other. We did make an advance And the only time we had to retreat, they were gunning up, and it was in a cornfield, and it was every edge was to fight for. It was in this blockade, and.
Yes, what was it like fighting in the Bocage?
Oh, terrible in there. You couldn't see the enemy, and if you made a move, took the, you had to be crawl all the time, crawl. I know there was one lad, he was crawling through the corn, and the pack on his back, it was absolutely in shatters, like no strips it was. this particular battle, they got the better of us. We weren't strong enough, and we were going to be encircled. And it's the only time Hastings ordered us back, and we went back, and made a defensive position. I think we took some German prisoners, and they were young, blonde, I think Hitler youth, or something like that. So they were sat there when I passed them, a sullen look on their face, Next time I saw them, we had to move back. They were all dead in the ditch. Their own fire had got them. I don't think our lads would have shot them, but it was there. It would be their own fire that killed them. Oh, they're all dead in the ditch.
You're meeting first line German troops now, aren't you?
Yes, them on the landing were third rate, but they were bringing up the better troops now. Yeah. We did some good anyway, because they said they were lining up to attack us, and we had broke up this formation. And however, after that, as we said, we moved back till we got more support.
What was the support like that was coming to you now? Artillery, for example, was it good?
Yes, good.
When did you use it? Were you able to call it down personally if you were in a situation? Could you communicate direct with anyone in the rear area?
Well, I wouldn't know about that actually, but I do know about this. The troops on D-Day were able to call up the Navy, because when the airborne was about to be attacked by the division, they called up the Navy, and they made this division retreat. And they called them up if a tank was advancing as well. Navy called them up. So the communication was good.
So if you hit a strong force, you're able to bring artillery fire from either the Navy and the Army, or both, down on them.
Yes, yes.
Did you have a forward observation officer with you from the Royal Artillery?
I never saw one, but it wasn't much good in this blockade, couldn't it? Artillery, you couldn't call artillery because you didn't know where you were, and they didn't know where you were, you see, so it was a man-to-man fighting.
What does the Bocage look like?
The tanks were no good, because I know a tank pulled up and he hit a mine, and I think Ollis took the Browning gun out of it. I see he carried out the Browning machine gun. The recovery tank came up, he pulled up to it, and he went up. So that was two tanks on it. It wasn't tank country, they couldn't move in it.
What was it like, the country?
It was all high edges and deep ditches and rocky. Oh, no, it couldn't. You fought for every edge, and at times, if you went through the corn and you were advancing, the Germans would be laid in the corn and let you pass, and then they'd open up on you. So to deter that, what you used to do when you come to the cornfield, you opened up on the cornfield before you advanced.
Did you work out a system of fighting through the Bocage?
Well,
I mean, obviously it would be based on your experience as you gained it.
Not actually, you couldn't. The thing was to keep your position as much, you know, if they fired on you, not to fire back. You give your position away, well, you get belted with that mortar fire. Which I once did. I mean, this Browning gun, what Ollie said, we were in a position and we were fired on. And I knew I had a section up front. So to give them support, I thought, I opened up with this Browning over the Reds, you see. Well, that was a mistake. Because at night time they came and belted hell out somebody for the run. So if you could keep your head when they fired on you and keep your position, they wouldn't bother. They always sent these Germans had this way of firing on you to try and discover your position, and then they would call their artillery or their mortars on to you. That was the way. You learnt that very quick.
How did you respond to mortar fire?
You just had to take it, you know.
So it was particularly
in the plot when you know that was it.
You could hear the guns going off, could you? The mortars going off.
Oh yeah, the plop.
But they were particularly good with the mortars, weren't they, the Germans?
Oh yes, yes. The mortar you're on, right?
Any other weapons that you were coming across which you earned respect, or you learned to respect them?
They never came up under the morning mini, you know, that double barrel one. You could hear further down on the beach the morning rum, 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 rum. What we call the morning mini. You could hear that.
You didn't come on for any of that.
We only had one aeroplane came over, I think. I heard him up above. I could tell he was German with the engine, you know. And the lads were laid in a ditch. I laid on top. I wasn't going to go in the ditch. But then he dropped a flare, and I was laying on my back like that, and I thought, it's going to come and land on me, this flare. So I crawled into the ditch, and the flare landed about 10 yards away from us. It was all bright moonlight. You know, you could see everything. First flare I've ever seen, but I didn't have to give a light out, because them flares are theirs. But he flew away and never bothered us.
Had you received any drafts to replace the losses that you had?
Yes, we received one draft, and among them was a field corporal and a sergeant. And we were out of the line then, we were on a rest period. That's when you got your reinforcements. And of course it was my job to take these two up to Loftus, to his tent, you see, and I asked him into Loftus. He wanted to interview them, and I stood outside. And Loftus said to them, he said, "How long have you been a sergeant?" And he said, "So many years." I thought, "That's good." And he said to the corporal, "How many years have you been a corporal?" He said, "So many times." Right? And he said, "Now," he said, he said, "You're going to earn, you've had a good time over in England, you're going to earn them stripes now." And I thought to myself, that's good, like, he can take over the platoon, like, because it's a hell of a responsibility. I thought, I know, they say it to me. And then he said to his son, he said, "And you'll take your orders from him outside." Oh dear. That was it.
Other than the responsibilities of leading your men as a sergeant,
when you came out for a rest, you had to build up your platoon, you had to check the weapons, you had to fit a man in, say, as a gunner, replacements and all that, as a platoon sergeant, I didn't want any of that. I wanted to be way down the village or something like that. I thought he would take over, and that was okay. But
did you have to take roll calls, of the daily roll calls, to see if your men were all there?
No, we didn't take that. No. But I lost officer after officer, I did, you know. And I always got placed out with my platoon because I had no officer out in front. And there was one time I was placed out on a crossroad. And a crossroad is an artillery objective. Well, we got there and one shell came over and kicked up a hell of a boost. And there was a big underground dugout. Germans had been there. So lads went down there. But me and two oldest lads, we went in front of the house. We lit a fire. There was a garden, potatoes and peas. And there was a young beast that had been badly wounded. So I got in touch, I sort of told him about this beast, like I said, we're going to shoot it. And then shot it. And I don't know whether I cooked liver out or some beef, and we cooked it on the fire. And we had a good dinner. And this officer came up to visit us. We were there to be 4 days there. He said, the brigadier rung up this morning to see how you were. I should have said to him, well, tell him to mention it in dispatches then, and something like that. Anyway, he said, do you want relieving? I said, no, we're quite happy here. Yeah? I said, do you want some dinner? So we gave him a dinner, and he said, this is better than the officer mess. Then I had to report to company headquarters. This is where I run into Hollis again. He'd just shot a pig. They were carrying it away to Cookhouse. And I said to him, we'll be all right for a bit of pork up there, won't we? And he never said nothing. But we didn't get any pork. But when I saw him later on, I said, you never send any pork up to my section up there. He said, that bloody officer of yours should have kept his mouth shut. So we got that. But,
Who was your platoon officer now?
I couldn't tell you. We had that many.
It didn't last long. It
lasted about a day, 2 days. That's all. In fact, Kirkpatrick, his runner, said to me, he said, you know, he wrote something down in his book about you. I said, I never got it. It would be most likely put me in a medal or something like that. Which I didn't get mentioned.
And yet you were at the front a great deal of the time.
Yeah, but I had no officer to recommend me. No.
Did you have to, at any stage, order a bayonet attack with your men?
No bayonet attack.
How did you deal with farmhouses as you came across them?
That was good, wasn't it? I always used to fall out with officers, I'll tell you that much. I never got on with a lot of them. And I gave one the biggest shock of his life. Now, when we came to these farmhouses, they kept a lot of rabbits. And they'd let them go free. Now, you used to catch them and skin them and we'd eat them. Now, this farmhouse that we were in, I was scouting around it. There was a rabbit there I was after. And he went into this bunch of nettles where there was a pile of wood high up, and he was sat there. And he was sat up on his haunches like, and said, well, I'm not going in there after you, me lad. So I up with my 10 gun and I fired. Little knowing that at the other side was the officer with his trousers down. And he jumped up and he said, "What have I done, Sergeant? What are you doing there?" I gave him the biggest shock in his life. Like, he said, you can't go around here firing guns like that. And I just went forward and picked the rabbit up. And you know, that rabbit, there's no blood coming out, is it? Nothing. And when I skinned it, I couldn't see where the bullet went through or nothing. Because a 10-gun bullet is pretty mean. I thought I would have blown his head off. But all it was, all his backbone was broken. And that was it. And he made a good meal. And then there was a donkey walking about. It had a bad wound. So I thought I'd put that out of its misery. I thought it started going to its head, side up then. And it went down. I thought, that's finished it, Mike. I went back to report to lads. And I had another shot. I went back and one of the lads said, "You never finished that donkey off. It was getting up again." So I should have put it in his floor then instead of side, you see.
Well, there are a lot of dead animals around.
Oh, especially when they landed on D-Day. There were lovely cattle there, scrawling. They were beginning to smell as well. All the bellies were blown up. Lovely cattle. Oh, the Normandy was rich, you know. The Germans had... it was good to be there. They had everything there. Rich is not Normandy, cattle and... Do you towns that suffered, not the villages in Normandy.
Do you recall attacking any German strong points which they'd made out of farmhouses or villages, other than the ones we've mentioned, of course?
Yes, we attacked one, and we drove them back out of his farmhouse.
How do you attack it? You've got a farmhouse there in front of you. You know it's been turned into a strong point. How do you tackle it?
Well, you just keep on fighting.
But you're moving in all the time,
right? Moving all the time and keep fighting as much as you can.
Yeah. Frontal attacks or from the flanks?
All round, if you can get all round, yes.
Were the Germans booby-trapping places and buildings and what have you?
Oh yes, I'll give you an instance of this. It was the Dorset Regiment who we were leaving. And they couldn't get out of their slick trenches quick enough. They didn't give us any positions or nothing. All they said was, the farmhouse is booby-trapped and the garden's booby-trapped. And away they went. So I said to the lads, "You heard that, Mike?" I said, "You better keep out of that farmhouse and out of that garden." And I left them and I went on somewhere else. When I came back, they were all in the farmhouse and they were all in the garden, digging potatoes up and that.
So they took it.
Oh, yeah.
Booby traps, did you come across any?
No, we're lucky, we didn't come across any booby traps.
Had you been warned about them though, to be careful?
Oh yes, yes, we've been careful. I know there was one case, I had the CSM, he said, "I'd like to see what's in that," it was like a dustbin, it was covered with wood. The wood all round it. Evidently, had pulled one back and had seen this here dust tin, you see. And he said, "A dust tin." So, me and my mates were after a rabbit again, you see. And we pulled it one back and said, "Oh, this is a tin. This is a tin that, that CSM was talking about. He'd like to see what is inside." So my mate, I said, "He thinks it'll be booby trapped." So my mate said, "Well, there's only one way." He went and got a long stick to lift the lid off, like, which was damn full lardy, like it would have blown into bits if it had been booby trapped. He lifted the lid off, and it was full of clothes, nice new clothes. And there was a suit there, and there was a lot of material for making dresses. So, and a top coat, so I parceled them up,
his top coat and his suit and sent it home. I got the office to sign, right? And he said, what you send him, like, oh, I said, just ordinary things, I said. So he signed, he had to sign it, you see. And I wrote on it, deceased private soldiers' effects. Well, he got home to North Holland, to the post office. My father being postman there, he picked it up. He went home with it and he said, I don't like this, something's happened, look at this. And my mother could straight away said, that's, he's doing that to get this through. And I had a nice suit and a top coat there. And